WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media Station.
CBS News Brief. Marine One landing in a private walled garden near Windsor Castle, where President Trump and the First Lady have just been welcomed by King Charles and top members of the royal family. A horse and carriage procession delivering the group to the castle now. Former CDC Director Susan Menares will testify on Capitol Hill today. CBS's Nicole Killian.
She will tell the Senate Help Committee that she believes she was fired because she did not pre-approve the recommendations from a newly reconstituted vaccine advisory panel and fire career scientist at the agency.
The suspect in the assassination of conservative activist Charlie Kirk's been hit with 7 charges, most serious aggravated murder. Prosecutor Chad Grenander.
Just for the court's information, we did file just recently, within the last few minutes, a notice of intent to seek the death penalty that was filed by Utah County Attorney Jeff Gray.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
For 540 WAUK News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. A police chase in Milwaukee ended last night with 3 people dead when a fleeing car hit another vehicle. Police say they first tried pulling the driver over near 36th and Wright at around 9:30, but the car sped off. The crash happened about a mile south at 35th and Valete. 3 people in the car that was hit died. 2 others inside were rushed to the hospital. The 19-year-old driver who was running from police was arrested after being hurt in the crash along with 2 of his passengers. Charges are pending. The goal is to improve the intake of international travelers. Milwaukee's Mitchell International Airport has started a $95 million project to modernize and expand its international travel capabilities. The new Concourse E terminal will replace the old International Arrivals terminal, nearly tripling the passenger capacity to handle 400 international arrivals an hour. Milwaukee County Executive David Crawley says the upgrade will boost international connections and economic growth for the area. Construction is expected to finish by 2027. The work is funded by airport revenue, bonds, and federal support. An 11-year-old is Milwaukee's latest homicide victim. Milwaukee police have confirmed that an 11-year-old was fatally shot last night near 68th Street and Silver Spring Drive. The child was taken to Children's Wisconsin but died at the hospital. There have been no reports of an arrest. An investigation continues. Employee paychecks may have a new address, but things are expected to stay the same at festival. Lisa Hale has more.
A Wisconsin-based grocery chain has been sold to a St. Louis-based company. Schnucks Markets purchased Festival Foods, and in a press release said the combined grocery stores will all fall under an umbrella company called 1939 Group Incorporated. Festival Foods, which operates 51 stores throughout the state, will keep its name.
And that's news on 540 WAUK. I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
The magic number is 7. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, the Brewers host the LA Angels again tonight. Last night, the crew with a 9-2 win. Christian Yelich, a 2-run homer in the 4th. Now, 7 is the Brewers' magic number to clinch the division, but Yelly says it's still too early for all that right now.
Yeah, I mean, we just need to focus on winning that night, like not even thinking about like the magic number. We need to just keep stacking wins and playing good baseball, and that'll take care of itself. You can't do that in one night. And you start looking ahead, then things can get away from you a little bit.
College football, the Badgers, getting ready to host Maryland Saturday at Camp Randall, kickoff 11 a.m. NFL, Packers wide receiver Jaden Reed confirming he's now had surgery to repair his broken collarbone and foot fracture. Meanwhile, Christian Watson says his new contract extension takes some pressure off as he tries to come back from that torn ACL.
For me, I mean, it was really just to, you know, take that pressure off of myself so I can kind of just go out there when I get back and just play free.
That's Packers wide receiver Christian Watson with Sports on Mike Clemens.
This report on WAUK is sponsored by Pickleball Kingdom, just a half mile north of Silver Spring Drive off Pilgrim Road, Menominee Falls. Pickleball Kingdom.
It is going to be mostly sunny today with a high in the low 80s this afternoon. Tonight, partly cloudy. We're going to drop to about 63 for an overnight low. Tomorrow, another sunny, warm day, although it will be a little cooler with a high right around 77. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 55.
Everyone's playing pickleball, and Pickleball Kingdom in Menominee Falls is where it's at. They have 17 pro courts. There's no waiting around. Court times that fit your schedule. Plus an impressive pro shop, event space, full locker rooms with showers, and a bar with big screen TVs so you can catch the action live. Just a half mile north of Silver Spring Drive off Pilgrim Road. Follow them on Instagram or Facebook. Pickleball Kingdom, Menominee Falls.
Ahoo, this is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we share stories from Turtle Island highlighting the people and issues shaping our communities. From protecting water to treaty rights and preserving languages and traditions, we cover it all. Hear voices like Arvina Martin of Emerge Wisconsin, Dr. Stately, Robert Lilligren, and more. Because Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
Maggie Dawn.
At 5 o'clock, I'll be joined by the general that helped save New Orleans, General Russell Honoré. He's a decorated 37-year Army veteran. We'll talk to him about the impacts the Trump regime has had on our armed services.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee. 540 WAUK.
Across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back. Nice to have you here up north on this September 17th, Wednesday morning, September 17. Keep that number 17 in mind as we talk to our next guest, Corrine Hendrickson, about the 17th State Senate District. Details to come right after Brittany's weather. And then in our next hour at 8:35, we will be talking to State Representative Francesca Hong, who announced this morning that she too will be running for Wisconsin governor next year. So we have a gubernatorial candidate coming up in our 8 o'clock hour. And that's not all. There's also tomorrow we'll be talking with former Racine Alderman Trevor Young, who has just announced his candidacy for the state Senate in the 21st district, the seat held since 2010, I believe, by Republican Van Wongard. So a lot to cover this week with the change of seasons, not just, you know, back to school, not just fall campaign season as well. But let's get to the fall part of the season with meteorologist Brittany Merlot, who joins us, along with Parker Olson, who's producing things down at Madison Studio A2. And I did not realize, because it's dark at the start of the show here, so the show is well underway for me to notice it is really foggy up here on Lake Wissota this morning. Is that something we're seeing all over the place?
Yeah, definitely up north right now, dense fog from Eau Claire through Hayward into Ashland and Superior. That's going to be here for about another hour or two. Temperatures, too, right now in the mid-50s to mid-60s across the state. We're also seeing a few thunderstorms starting right now, pretty much from Amory through Rice Lake, and that could extend towards the Minocqua area, too. We have a front just sitting here over the northern part of the state this morning. So that's kind of the case as we go through the next day. This front is going to slowly make its way south through the state, and then the system, the low pressure itself, will eventually move into the state for the weekend. So yes, wet weather ahead and cooler temperatures too, but not today. We're still looking very warm across the state, low to mid 80s everywhere. Some of us will be nearing 90 once again. It will be a sunny day, especially south into Madison and Milwaukee. Clouds will be increasing though west and north throughout the afternoon. Drizzle is possible far southwest midday. And then we're looking at more small storms sparking up again this evening, especially northeast in our state. And then tomorrow, cooler, slightly cooler, especially north, only mid-60s up north. 80s will still be felt down south tomorrow. Scattered spotty showers are expected kind of statewide, very isolated, very brief and small. But chances for sunshine still hang on into Madison and Milwaukee until the weekend. That's when that low pressure system arrives. So heavier rain and storms on the way.
Conceivably, today and tomorrow could mark the last of the mid-80s.
It could.
It could. Unless we get a nice little warm spell in October, which does happen, by the way.
It does. Even in November, it's happened. So.
Yes. Okay. So shut up, Pat. Don't get ahead of yourself here. Good morning from Tigerton, writes Rob. Partly cloudy and 59 degrees. It felt a lot like mid-July rather than mid-September. Yesterday was busy mowing lawns in Wittenberg. To me, this is the first that has been actually
dry, a lot of dry grass that's drying out for the first time since spring. Today, he's got a mowing job in rural Tigerton, a doctor's appointment in Shawano, and he writes no fog in the Tigerton area. Tony writes that these 80 degree days have been killing me. It's so hot and I refuse to turn on my air conditioner. You live on Lake Superior. You have the world's greatest air conditioner up there, Tony. The Tony also adds, it was so foggy, I could barely see the turkeys crossing the road. Unacceptable. You got to be able to see the turkeys when
seriously,
they're heading across.
And the deer up there.
Yes, exactly. And yeah, so that's from Tony and that's from Rob. And we'll have more from Brittany coming up in 1 hour. Brittany, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Also a note up here from our friends at Motherhood for Good who are saying good morning. I sense they maybe want to hear more from one of our next guests coming up. This is a candidate announcement kind of day, a candidate announcement kind of week. You had State Senator Kelda Royce getting into the race for governor a couple days ago. I just mentioned State Representative Francesca Hong also joining the governor's race. There are state Senate candidates, one I just told you about in the Racine area, and now one potentially in the Nuclearis area, as we welcome in Corrine Hendrickson to tell us what she's going to be up to later today, former child care provider in the Nuclearis area. Corrine, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. It's still really weird to hear former in front of that.
I completely, it's weird for me to say it, and it's not something we necessarily like to dwell on, but the thing that's prompting, you know, your change in what you do on a day-to-day basis is rooted in a Wisconsin legislative leadership team that did not ever seem to take everything that you said seriously about just how serious childcare and other issues are for Wisconsin families. And so consequently, what's that meant for you? What is it that you plan to be doing throughout the day today?
So it means that I guess I have to do it myself.
There you go.
So I am officially running for State Senate District 17. That is the southwestern part of Wisconsin, which we have some really good progressive Democratic roots, and we just need to get back to them. And a lot of it comes down to the lack of affordability in our daily lives, whether it's groceries, childcare, our property taxes continuing to increase because our state refuses to invest in our public schools appropriately and instead is cutting taxes for the wealthy and to keep the powerful in power. So at 10:30 this morning, I will be launching at the Nuclearis Village Park. Super excited because in Nuclearis, it's a tradition to have elk horns and there will be elk horns there as well. So I'm hoping that lots of people will join me and support me in my newest adventure.
Those are those big Swiss horns, like everybody's going to get a Ricola lozenge or something at this point.
Maybe hey, that should be my thing.
There you go. Instead of tossing candy at parades, you're tossing cough drops. It could be whatever works for you. Now let's take care of the elephant in the room, or shall we say the donkey, because we're going to be talking about primaries, and that 2026 is probably going to be a year unlike any other in terms of primaries. You've got an open governor's seat, an open lieutenant governor's seat, an open secretary of state seat, and you've already got three Democratic candidates announced in the third congressional district, and now you have in these state senate districts at least three different state senate districts. Now there will be primaries as well, and that includes in your district where Representative Jenna Jacobson has also already announced. In this case, let's just bring it down to this particular example in the 17th Senate District. There is a motivator for multiple Democrats to want to run, and that's because the Republican incumbent, Howard Markline, chairs the Joint Finance Committee. So, I mean, all the more motivation for Democrats to jump in, right?
Oh, absolutely. I also find it interesting that so far, Senate 17 is all women. Lisa White is also running. And the CD3, which is Van Orden's, is all women too. So I feel like there's a little bit of, women wanting to make sure that we can take care of our families and our communities and stepping up into this space. I think it's good there's a primary. I think we can, you know, learn from each other. I think the voters have a right to choose because, you know, we fought for gerrymandering. So that's part of why there's so many also interested. This seat is now winnable because the lack of gerrymandering. In our state, we have fair maps, but at the same time, you know, have a robust primary because that's the way for the people to decide who they want on their party ticket, I guess you would say. So I'm looking forward to, you know, getting to know people and proving, you know, that I'm the hardest worker and the best for the position.
The comments are already coming in, including from Tony, that says it seems like a great opportunity for new faces and for new ideas as well. And now, again, I'm not looking to make Senator Howard Markline, you know, the issue is certainly not the centerpiece of your campaign, but the symbolism of a co-chair for joint finance in budgets that cycle after cycle after cycle seem to be out of sync with what he and others are hearing at all those budget public hearings around the state. Again, seems to be rather representative of why anybody is running for legislature around Wisconsin this year.
Oh, absolutely. When you look at the Joint Finance Committee hearings, when you look at the Assembly and Senate hearings in office at the Capitol, they're being told over and over and over again, this is what we want, this is what we need. And then they refuse to do it. 2 years ago, when they did the special session for the workforce, you know, they had 200 people send letters, 100 people show up and speak to the fact that they wanted this special session bill to pass. And after the hearing, they put an amendment in and completely gutted the whole thing. And so really, we need people that are not just going to say they're listening and that they understand there's a problem, but that they care enough to do something about it and are willing to go outside of their box that they put themselves into, of their opinions of what's important to, it feels like almost it's what's important to them themselves instead of listening to what their constituents have to say.
Well, I think it's pretty clear talking to Corrine Hendrickson, state Senate candidate in the 17th district, what you're going to be hearing from Republicans and others, because, I mean, we've been hearing this for 15 years or more, and it's going to go something like this. Well, there she goes again. Here's another tax and spend liberal, and she and Tony Evers and everybody else, they just want to tax and they want to spend. And, you know, we're the ones that are holding the line on taxes. We're the ones that are holding the line on spending and being more fiscally responsible. You know, that's what you're going to hear over and over again. So now that I've teed that up, what are you going to tell the voters?
So it's more of an investment. It's more, how do we spend the money that we take in for taxes? Currently, our state budgets have been to the point where they encourage the people who have the wealthy and the most money to keep as much money as possible, to hoard that money. And meanwhile, the rest of us are working as hard as we can. And we're not seeing that money. We were promised with some of these tax credits that job growth would happen, job creation would happen. We don't need to raise the minimum wage because the employers will do it automatically for us. And that's not what we're seeing. What we're seeing is that those tax cuts have actually starved our public schools from the resources that they need. And I'm really worried, and people in my area are really worried about this next year with all the referendums that are likely to come, or, you know, if they don't pass or schools really, you know, don't want to continue to increase property taxes, what are they going to cut? The first thing is music and art and, you know, sports and all, and musicals and all the things that enrich our children's lives and, you know, make them want to go to school as well, and just make them more well-rounded individuals, and then allow our communities to have things that we come together over. The musical sells out every year here. I have Elkhorns coming today. If we don't have a music program, there won't be kids who can play those instruments. We won't have the fundraisers at, you know, the festivals, because there will be no music at those, because our state is refusing to invest and cutting it. Same thing. We have a dire workforce shortage, but we have a huge number of parents of young children who want to work, but they can't because they cannot afford and access childcare. Those of us in the field, were in the field, sorry, see, I can't do it. Those who are remaining in the field of childcare are struggling. Two more just announced their closing that have been open for over 20 years because they can't afford to keep going, because they can't charge parents anymore. They're losing kids. I'm hearing now of kids at 5, 6, and 7 are going home. We're back to the latchkeys of the 1980s, and it's just not safe, and it's scary, and it does not have to be this way. So again, it isn't tax and spend. It's invest our money appropriately so that we recoup those loss, that we recoup that money, and we grow our economy, we grow our communities, and we, you know, have our kids can come back to the small towns that they're vacating right now, because there just isn't anything for them in there.
Yeah, and you've definitely made the link, not just for childcare to then K-12 education, but again, to small businesses. There are all kinds of employers that are practically begging the legislature to do something because they're losing too many good workers to this childcare crisis as well, and they want well-educated workers. So you're going to hear these themes and more from Corrine Hendrickson. Her website is corrineforseventeen.com. Corrine is C-O-R-R-I-N-E. CorrineFor17.com, and on all the social media sites, just put in CorrineFor17 as the handle, and you'll get her on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and more. Corrine, thank you so much for taking time to make your announcement with us this morning. We really appreciate it. Have fun with the horns at the announcement, and we'll talk again real soon.
Yeah, sounds good. Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Pleasure seeing you, and best of luck as you move forward. Again, there are going to be primaries in several races here, so really keep that August date in mind if you plan to vote Republican or Democrat and get to know the candidates in your local community. We'll have our homeroom segment coming up in just a bit. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
School sports are played by humans, coached by humans, and officiated by humans. So the next time you're sitting in the stands at a school athletic event, please remember this and maintain your humanity, especially when it comes to judging and critiquing athletes, coaches, and officials. Please show your fellow humans some respect. They'll appreciate your empathy.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Frank Hermans.
When we moved here, I called the Y because my daughter was like, I don't know, 7 years old. I said, hey, I'm calling about your beginner's gymnastics class. I'm 40 years old. I've never had a gymnastics class. So do you think I should start there? Frank, I get nothing. On the other end, it's just silence. Even after she knew I was kidding.
You should tape that.
Come on. And I did take the class and I did really well.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. If you're looking for honest talk, real stories, and straight-up news that matters to you, tune in to The Rick Smith Show. We're digging into the issues that affect your job, your family, your future. Join me weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network because your voice deserves to be heard. That's The Rick Smith Show, heard weeknights at 9 right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Teachers are diverse, skilled leaders, innovating to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Teaching shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org, supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach. I'm back, and here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin this morning. Last month, southeastern Wisconsin was hit with historic and unprecedented flooding the likes we haven't seen in many, many years, leaving people with damaged homes and property. The cleanup is still ongoing, and FEMA is still doing their assessment on all the areas that were affected. But because next time is a when, not an if, it's important to have a plan in place. That's why Don Rosen spoke with the Racine County Office of Emergency Management about what you can do to stay safe and stay prepared.
It is time to get you prepared for any disaster that comes your way, except like maybe a phone bill in the mail if you didn't pay. Anything other than that, we're set for. And my guests are Lorenzo Santos. He's the director of the Racine County Office of Emergency Management, and Liz Adams, who is the deputy emergency management coordinator. This is part of our Racine County Traffic Safety Commission monthly get-together, Racine County Office of Emergency Management. Now, you can check this on the website. I figured out how to do it. It's Racine County/safety. Go down to the last one. That's the one we're talking about today. Racine County/safety. And you should be able to follow along with us today. Let's start off with the director, Lorenzo. Okay, so what kind of disasters are we looking at?
In Racine, you know, one of the biggest disasters that we're always looking for since we're close to a body of water, close to the Root River, is flooding. We want to make sure that we're always prepared for that. And of course, as we come up on, you know, the fall and winter, we want to make sure that we are prepared for winter storms. Wisconsin is no stranger to winter weather, and that's something that we always want to make sure that we're preparing for here.
What can happen in winter? I mean, I know tornadoes, hurricanes.
Sure.
I know earthquakes, all those kind of things, tsunamis, that we don't have tsunamis here. But, you know, I've seen devastation from tsunamis. So what in winter? What can be the problem?
Yeah, winter can wreak all sorts of havoc. I mean, really, one of the biggest things that you see is obviously traffic flow changes when it becomes winter. You get a lot of snow. That morning commute or even afternoon commute will get a lot tougher to handle. It can have a huge effect on electricity. You know, a lot of times when we have a blizzard or a winter storm, all of a sudden the power goes out. So that's going to affect a lot of people's day, whether it's home or work. So those are, you know, just two general ways that that a heavy winter storm is going to affect your everyday life. We want to make sure that we're getting out is information to the public. We want to make sure that we're telling folks what the weather's going to look like. So we work very closely with NWS Milwaukee. We are always forecasting, previewing what's going to happen and trying to get that information out and working with first responders, because they're going to be the folks that are out there making sure that everyone is safe. When people are calling in to dispatch, it's our first response teams that are going to go out making sure that they're helping everyone. We are those that the team in the background that is helping out our first responders, making sure that they have the information that they need and the resources to respond effectively.
Let me talk to Liz for a second here. It says make a plan.
Mm-hmm.
How do you make a plan for, well, tornadoes in our case, or even a snowstorm? Or we mentioned earlier that on, I was talking to you off the air, I thought it was in Kenosha. No, it had to be in Racine. A farmer's big tank of noxious chemicals spilled, and it was in the air, and there were homes nearby. How do you make a plan for something like that?
Yeah, so it's basically, it's impossible to plan for everything. So what we try to do is develop principles and concepts that will be applicable no matter what the emergency. We call this all hazards planning. And you at home, you can also do something similar to this. You don't have to try to think about every possible emergency. I'm sure most people are not going to be planning for a hazmat release from a farm next door. But if you kind of know where the like evacuation route would be in your house, or if you know where like the rally point is in your yard for your family to meet up at, that can all be really helpful no matter what the emergency is.
How do you plan for a tornado? No, we don't get a lot of them in Racine. I have seen one before. When it took the doors off Menards on Highway 11 and also the roof off Case on Highway 11, how do you prepare for a tornado? Because, I mean, it'll rip your house right up the foundations if it hits you directly.
Yeah, tornadoes are definitely one of those hard ones because they can come out of nowhere. They happen very quickly, and a lot of times you get very little warning ahead of times. If you have a basement, if you have kids, letting them know, okay, if you hear the tornado sirens, go to the basement. If you don't have a basement, identifying a good place in your house to shelter from the tornado. If you're outside, generally knowing where to go if you hear the sirens or if you get the alert that there's a tornado warning imminent.
And you can't depend on cell phones, because if there's a storm, who knows if cell phone coverage will go out. And nobody's got landlines anymore, so yeah. You're dependent on cell phones. We're lucky because we're in good shape now. There are cities that are wiped off the map, and they say, well, our sirens weren't working. We were going to get new ones. It's too late now.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we're very lucky. So who's in charge of the sirens? Who tests and blasts those out?
Well, often it comes down to individual municipalities. What I will say is, you know, we get a lot of calls. People ask, hey, you know, we could not hear the siren. A lot of times you're not going to hear it if you're inside. Maybe sometimes, depending on if you have music up loud, you're not going to hear it. So one of the things that I would say is one of the best things that you have in your toolbox to have that preparedness and have that situational awareness of storms is get yourself a NOAA radio, weather radio. Those are very important. They're very loud. If there are any kind of storms, any kind of alerts that come through, you're absolutely going to hear it. And it's going to be one of the best things that you can have available to make sure that you get that information in a timely manner.
Huge thanks to Lorenzo Santos and Liz Adams from the Racine County Office of Emergency Management for joining Don to talk about what you can do to stay more prepared in emergency situations. If you want to listen to that entire interview, go to civicmedia.us/shows. Look for the Don Rosen Show and find the episode entitled Getting Serious About Emergency Preparedness. You can download it directly to your device and listen to it anytime, anywhere. Again, that's civicmedia.us/shows. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. For WAUK and Civic Media, my name is Greg Bach. I'll talk to you in 20 minutes. It's 7:29.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Milwaukee's home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. You're listening to 540 WAUK, Milwaukee's home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m.
Well, Wisconsin schoolrooms are back in session, and this year it looks like a lot of students are interested in where their food comes from and agriculture education. I'm Pam Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news on a Wednesday. I've got some numbers for you on the strength of agriculture education in Wisconsin. That's next.
From sugar beet fields to dairy facilities, producers count on an operating line of credit from Ag Country Farm Credit Services to help make their operations more profitable. With multi-year commitment options, digital tools and remote deposit, and the ability to only borrow what you need when you need it, our operating line of credit makes financing your needs easier. Visit agcountry.com/lineofcredit or call 800-450-9858 to learn more. Terms apply. See website for details.
Sally Ladston is the Wisconsin Agriculture, Food, and Natural Resources Education Consultant at the Department of Public Instruction. She's also the state FFA advisor, and she says they're thrilled to announce that there's more FFA chapters starting up this year around Wisconsin.
We have seen a few chapters chartering, and actually that's something that's been kind of, I'll say, booming. You know, the numbers aren't staggering by any means, but compared to the past number of years, we're seeing quite an increase in chapters that are getting interested. This year, we're excited to welcome a couple of new chapters. Winnebago Lutheran is one, iForward, which is a virtual school up in Northwest Wisconsin. And then we're also seeing some changes in how chapters are structuring themselves.
Sally Ladston with the Department of Public Instruction and the Wisconsin State FFA advisor, she says, because of all the strength in students enrolled in agriculture education and food-related classes, they've needed, obviously, more educators. She said the good news is Wisconsin's got flexible alternative licensure options to keep those programs moving forward.
At the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, they know your business has always been something special. Now you can let customers know it too, in an instant, with the red and yellow Something Special from Wisconsin sticker. Joining the program gives you access to supplier and distribution information, marketing support, and a community of like-minded Wisconsin businesses. Best of all, you'll let people know that your work is done with care, quality, and love. You've always been something special. Visit somethingspecialfromwisconsin.com to make it official.
And our Wisconsin entries did very well in the 2025 World Dairy Expo Championship Dairy Product Contest. 97 product classes they could enter. Congratulations to Lake Country Dairy Schumann Cheese as the grand champion winner in the cheese and butter category with their vanilla mascarpone cheese. Also, congratulations to the grand champion winner of ice cream, sherbet, frozen yogurt, and gelato. That's peanut butter chocolate ice cream from Kirshner's Super Premium Ice Cream in Chautauqua. You can see all the winners at MidwestFarmReport.com. I'm PM Yonke.
This report on 540 WAUK is sponsored by Horizons Law Group. Learn more online at horizonslaw.com.
It is going to be mostly sunny today with a high in the low 80s this afternoon. Tonight, partly cloudy. We're going to drop to about 63 for an overnight low. Tomorrow, another sunny, warm day, although it will be a little cooler with a high right around 77. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 55.
If you're trying to do your own divorce, divorce coaching can be a godsend. It can help you organize all of your financials, review your spouse's financials, and help you put together a proposal to resolve your divorce or be able to articulate why the proposal is unfair and whether you can push back on things like an inheritance or the income of the other party. Call Horizons Law Group today and speak to attorney Michelle Fitzgerald, 262-432-3600. or horizonslaw.com.
Matt Nair on air.
Dr. Kristen Lierley is here.
I also don't want to, you know, sit and doom scroll before I go to sleep at night because that's not good for my brain. It doesn't help my sleep patterns. Right.
My brother-in-law, you went to medical school with him. He said at 2 hours, turn off all screens. At 1 hour, get yourself ready for bed. And he goes, and Greg, bed is for two things. That's it.
What are they?
Moving on.
Sleeping in
listen
chest.
To you laugh.
Matt Nair on air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jane Matt Nair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, soybean crops are sitting in the fields. China not interested in buying. We're talking tariffs with James Vanderloo. I hope you can join us.
Matt Nair on air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11.
Boy, there's a lot going on today. 7:35. Welcome back. It's a Wednesday morning, September 17th. We just heard from Corrine Hendrickson announcing her candidacy for state Senate. 1 hour from now, we will be talking to State Representative Francesca Hong all about her run for Wisconsin governor, joining a growing field there. Tomorrow, we'll be talking to Trevor Young, who is a former Racine Alder who has just announced he's running for state Senate in the 21st District over in the Racine area. And if you can't catch all this live on the radio from 6 until 9, or social media, if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, then you really ought to get this show by podcast so you can dip in and hear some of the highlights. So head over to Spotify. Sign up to follow the show or Apple, wherever you get your podcast, and never miss a moment of what we do. You can also get connected to all this through the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. All right, welcome to our homeroom segment that we do every week at this time. Talk a bit about public education in Wisconsin and the things that impact it. A lot of those things come from the state capitol, and not just the state budget, which is all done now, but certainly all the other ways where lawmakers can introduce bills that are helpful or even harmful, as the case may be, depending on, you know, what people in the Assembly and Senate think of our public school system and what ought to be done with it. Somebody's got to track all these things. And for the Wisconsin Public Education Network, that would include our friend Bryn Horton, who joins us for a little update. Bryn, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you?
Very good. Thanks. Nice to have you along.
Yeah.
There's always so much beyond the budget that could get done for our schools or to our schools, yes, as the case may be. So right now the fall legislative session is just getting going. We never really know just how busy or not busy they'll be at any given point. So there are bills that are introduced. Some may get a committee hearing. Some may go to the floor of the Assembly or Senate. Some may just be introduced and not come up at all. But you have to note that they've been introduced because, you know, these are things that conceivably could happen. So as you're looking beyond the state budget at what the legislature could be considering this fall, what kinds of things are you keeping your eye on?
Yeah, so I think the main thing that we're keeping an eye on, which I feel like the fall is always a time of hurried introduction of bills because they haven't really done much since the budget passed. But both sides of the assembly introduced, well, they haven't been formally introduced yet, but gave press conferences on packages of education bills that they're planning to introduce to the legislature. Soon, I would imagine they're getting co-sponsored. And so it's interesting to see the play between both of those sets of packages.
Do you want to run through like the highlights of each package, the Republican package and the Democratic package?
Yeah. And this is fully going off of the press conference, sure. Press conferences that I've listened to because I haven't seen the bill texts of them yet. But the Democratic side is introducing bills for healthy school meals for all, which has long been a topic that that the Democratic Assembly members have tried to get through in the last couple of sessions. There is a bill about voucher transparency and having the impact of those dollars on tax bills. And then also there is a bill around budget and financing and the things that they're trying to do to balance out the lack of funding that came in the budget. And then the Republican side, my understanding is there's a bill around math curriculum and changes to math curriculum. I'm sensing that might have some of the same type of connotations that Act 20 did for reading. That's the guess that I'm going from that one. And then a parents' rights bill, which is also a bill that they've tried to get through a couple times in the past. And then also some bill around school discipline and teachers being able to do what they need to do to help with student behavior. Since that seems to be a talking point across the nation of teachers not feeling like they have the ability to do what they need to do to control student behavior.
So those are just some of the things that you might see in the Democratic package of bills, in the Republican package of bills. Looking at some of the things that are on the Wisconsin Education Association Council website and things that they're following, you also see kind of the same, shall we say, division between the two parties, where one is looking to maybe enhance prep time for teachers, while another may be seeking to micromanage prep time for mm-hmm. teachers. And as we mentioned with Peggy Wirtz-Olson from WEAC a couple of weeks back, I mean, some of these bills, again, they may not go anywhere, but just the introduction of them is noteworthy. For example, restricting the kinds of flags that can be displayed in public buildings like schools and in classrooms. There's always something about, cursive handwriting as well. And then on a slightly broader level, state testing standards. And so I really kind of feel like there's this tug of war, if you will, between micromanaging, our educators and giving them the resources and flexibility to teach our kids.
Yeah, it's, I think, interesting in the cross specs of local control and the way that Wisconsin school districts have been created to give school districts and local school boards local control. And yet they're constantly being given ways that they need to do things, even though that might not be something that works well in their local school district. And so I think that's a constant look, at least, is how are we making sure that school boards are being able to have their local control rights that they were given by the state statutes.
Mm-hmm. We also have, we talked about this recently. It was kind of news to an old guy like me that cell phone bans, are, I guess I just thought they were there and they're not. And it's become a hot discussion topic again. And I'm sure that I think there's at least one bill dealing with cell phone bans, and there will probably be others that you'll have to track in the Capitol as well.
Yeah, and that's interesting because I believe that the cell phone bills tend to have bipartisan support. And what I've heard from that is that because there are a lot of school districts that have their own policies, and what I've heard is that their hope is to, in order to pass a bill like that, that school districts then have the ability to be able to say, oh, see, it's not us. It's the state telling us that we have to do this. So when there's pushback, that they have something to fall back on, which I guess is a nice way of them thinking that that's good that the state, that we can fall back on the state. But I do think there's still a need of that. There's a reason why we have that school districts have local control, because school districts mm-hmm. are so very different from each other across the state.
Yeah. We're talking to Bryn Horton, and she follows for the Wisconsin Public Education Network the various bills that get introduced at the state capitol that could have an impact on our schools and on your kids' education. And again, from the Republican side, we see just such a focus on issues that involve such a small percentage of what goes on in society, much less our education. In this case, I'm referring to various gender restrictions on participation in sports and other activities. That's another bill I'm assuming Republicans will try to bring up and push, even though they know that Governor Evers would likely veto anything resembling that.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And I do believe that there is a lot of talk about the fact that the Senate might not possibly go into any more floor sessions the rest of this year. Mm-hmm. And so even though, introductions happen and those bills will definitely get referred to committees and actually have public hearings, which doesn't happen for a lot of bills that could actually fix things or help things in the school districts. It's those dividing bills that get public hearings.
Right. They do. And I'm sure there will be something. There is a bill, of course, to require English only in mm-hmm. schools. We talked about the flag display. There's another bill that would require, the national motto "In God We Trust" to be displayed yes. in all courtrooms. Somebody just asked me yesterday, did that law really pass in Texas that requires the Ten Commandments to be displayed in every classroom? I'm like, yeah,
yep.
that's a thing. And that which means it's going to encourage, some legislator in Wisconsin to try to do the same thing. So you're right. We're going to hear a lot of what you would call social issues or wedge bills mm-hmm. or anything like that. Those seem the ones that get the public hearings and get some attention.
Yes, absolutely. And there's never any funding attached to those. So, we can display the motto in the schools, but it's going to cost the school districts money to have to do all of that stuff. And so that's the other part of it, too, that comes with is we can give us all these things to do and then don't give any money to be able to accomplish those effects.
Yeah, we just talked about this with Jimmy Kaska a couple of weeks back when we talked about scoreboards and how I did not know that there still wasn't a shot clock for high school basketball, but mm-hmm. that's because every school would have to, not every school, but many schools would have to replace yeah. their scoreboard. They don't have the money to replace mm-hmm. a scoreboard. So if they don't have money to replace a scoreboard, they sure don't have money to be putting up, religious symbols and mottos and things like that in our schools as well. And all of this, Bryn, really comes back to, a central theme of this segment, and that is providing our public schools with the resources they need. That includes the voucher transparency that we've mm-hmm. talked about here. And by the way, the Wisconsin Public Education Network, just this week kicked off a public campaign to increase the transparency of the voucher program so that taxpayers know how much it really costs. So head over to wisconsinnetwork.org to learn more. But Bryn, again, it really is what you're hearing from the Democratic side is let's give schools the resources and the tools they need rather than more restrictions.
Yeah, definitely. Ways to be able to find more funding to be able to help close that funding gap that's going to be left with the budget. And the main one that I think that I'm really watching on the Republican side is that there is a bill to get rid of the $325 automatic revenue limit increase that the governor got passed into law through his partial line veto and then was upheld. But there is a bill out there to get rid of that now. And so that's the kind of thing that, the punishment that comes along with being able to get that, now we need to take that away, even though that's not actually more funding from the state.
Yeah, that's just it. Because of the creative use of the line item veto, you now have this per pupil adjustment locked in for, 300 years or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But again, if you're not giving an increase in overall general state aid, it really doesn't mean much. But of course, that's what Republicans are going after. They're going after the line item veto rather than putting a focus on what can we do for our schools? What can we do for our kids? And I guess I'm not confident that a bill that would get rid of the 300-year extension will be accompanied by, okay, we'll do an extension for a couple of years. No, they'll just get rid of it entirely.
Yeah.
We have seen how that goes. There's also bills out there for everything from requiring civics education to mm-hmm. tuition and fee remission for veterans and dependents, technical colleges leasing their facilities. There's just so many things that have to be followed in the Capitol, and Bryn Horton does that for the Wisconsin Public Education Network. Bryn, thank you so much for doing all of that and for taking some time to give us a little update this morning.
Absolutely. Happy to do it.
All right. Thank you, Bryn. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks. You too.
As we mentioned, it is a day of campaign announcements. Corrine Hendrickson announcing her run for state Senate earlier this hour. And then less than an hour from now at 8:35, State Representative Francesca Hong, newly announced candidate for Wisconsin governor, will join us to talk about why she has chosen to run for that office in 2026. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Are you ever questioning when life will slow down? Are you ever thinking of just relaxing and enjoying the simple things? All of this is possible, even while still being in the workforce. Worthington, Minnesota is a town growing, yet it's nothing like Metro Life. Professional and labor jobs, a beautiful lake, bike trails, recreation, acres of public hunting, festivals, and great people. Slow down. We're just a short drive away, so come join us. Worthington, it's worth a look.
Looking to give back to your community? Visit volunteerwisconsin.org to find volunteer opportunities near you. Join us in celebrating United Ways Month by getting involved. Visit volunteerwisconsin.org or contact your local United Way today. Paid for by United Way of Wisconsin.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Kira Sabin, positive psychology midlife coach.
People cannot take away our joy. When I spend time with people I love, putting my time and energy in things that I love that I think are important, not much has really changed. If you are worried about LGBTQIA plus rights, go volunteer at that organization.
You know you're moving the cause forward, and that's great for our mental health.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for youth.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals into your body.
And nicotine, which can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media.
Many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping.
Because when you talk, they hear you.
Learn more at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Where working people come to talk. It's the Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join me for an honest approach to the issues American working families care about. No talking points, no focus groups. Get ready for a heavy dose of democracy, fairness, grit, and no apologies. It's current affairs from a working class labor perspective. Facts are center, science is real, and everyone gets a seat at the table. The Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Is getting vaccinated on your to-do list? We can help you check that off.
You've got this.
Yes, you do. See how we've got you at yougotthis.usaging.org. A message from the Aging and Disability Vaccination Collaborative, powered by U.S. Aging.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Your local Civic Media radio station is your source for real news and great conversation, plus fun and exciting contests. For a complete list of contest rules, log on waukradio.com/contest-terms.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach, and I'm back, and here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin this morning. If you've been tuning into Matinair on Air, you know that we've been talking a lot about the closure of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And today, we hear a conversation between myself, Greg Bach, and Brian Wadsworth, who's the Chief Operating Officer of Native Public Media. And instead of me getting into a long-winded intro, let's just go right to Brian talking about what Native Public Media is and what they do for the community.
Public Media, we are a Native-led nonprofit that works exclusively with tribally licensed radio and television stations throughout the country. We have a network of about 58 tribally licensed radio stations, as well as 3 tribally licensed radio or television stations throughout the country. And so the work that we do at Native Public Media, we work with our stations to work with them on their various compliance with the heavy regulations that they have being in broadcasting. So we work with them on their regulations. We also have, we offer training for our stations. We have an emergency management planning training as to get our stations prepared to stay on the air in the event of an emergency, as well as underwriting, how to generate funds from underwriting for our radio stations, and then our station support program, which was funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. We worked hand in hand with the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, as well as with the 36 tribally licensed radio stations that received the community service grant. So we have the unique opportunity to be able to work with them one-on-one, provide technical assistance with the, I worked on the financial compliance aspect of their CSG grant, and then my counterpart, Kyler at City, our programs coordinator, worked with them on the non-financial compliance. So we got to help them out with, we tracked all of their financial data, all of their financial information, as well as our non-financial information. And probably the best part was being able to get out there and go out there and visit the stations, visit them on their homelands, and get to meet and get to know the station personnel. And they really do, they really are our family. So we were in a unique situation to be able to go out there and work with them, talk with our stations, see what's going on, and being able to serve as a liaison between the tribal stations as well as the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and be able to, like I said, work hand in hand with them, and you know, really being able to be that liaison. So if there are issues going on with the station, we're able to actively communicate that with to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, whether that's personnel changes or if the station's struggling to, if they're having issues with their auditors or anything, any issues the stations were having, we were able to communicate that to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and really help them understand some of the struggles that are going on within Indian Country. For example, one of our Alaska stations, their internet was cut off, and their nearest place they could get internet was about 6 hours away. And so, you know, we had to find some workaround since everything is online these days, and they didn't have access to reliable internet. So we had to find workarounds and, you know, hard mailing letters using snail mail or even utilizing faxes to get information from the station to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
That is an amazing rundown of what you do. And I'm glad you made it that detailed, because you mentioned several times in there the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And because of the big bill for billionaires, it has been zeroed out, which means at the end of this month, most of the jobs are going to be vacated and it's going to be closed permanently at the beginning of next year. We're losing the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, everyone. You've said this many times on the show. We spoke to Robert Pilot, who's the host of Native Radio, about this, but I wanted to talk to you because you are a part of a group that deals with a lot of stations. What does that closure mean for those stations, and what does it mean for Native public media?
Well, for our stations, if they were to go dark, I mean, those stations serve as a lifeline for our tribal communities. It's not just about broadcasting music, but they also offer programming in their indigenous languages. So for a lot of our tribes, that's how, you know, our youth, that's how they're able to learn their language. It's about being able to share information within their community, keeping their community updated on not only what's going on, you know, nationally, but also what's going on locally with their tribal governments and with their tribal councils and different events going on within the community, but also being able to share any sort of emergency information that happens within those communities, whether it's, you know, fire or flooding or tornadoes, active shooters. They are the lifelines for these communities, especially a lot of our tribes are located in rural areas. And some of the stations that we go visit, you know, we fly into a major airport and we're having to drive 2 to 3 hours to get to the station. So a lot of these stations are located in remote rural areas, and in some areas they don't have access to broadband internet. I mean, my tribe, the Pyramid Lake Paiute tribe here in Northern Nevada, we just got hooked up with broadband internet. So we've had to, you know, utilize our cell phones as hotspots, which isn't the most reliable with cell phone service being out here in rural Nevada. So, you know, these remote tribes, they rely, and radio is the most is reliable, because, you know, if you have a signal, if you have your vehicle, or if you have a portable radio, you're able to get that information. So, and in a lot of the training we do with our stations, we train them on how to be prepared to stay on the air. So they're able to, you know, make sure this emergency information is being able to be disseminated to their communities. So, you know, when internet goes out, the power goes out, you know, our radio stations, they're able to stay on the air and they're able to keep their communities informed, and, you know, which is a lifeline for these communities.
I really encourage you to go to civicmedia.us/shows, look up Matt and Aaron Air, and find the episode entitled It's Always Been About Staying Resilient. You're going to listen to a great conversation with Brian Wordsworth from Native Public Media, and his insight shows that the closure of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting will have wide array effects on all sorts of stations when it comes to public broadcasting. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. To take your favorite WAUK shows with you on the go, download the free Civic Media app in the Apple or Google Play Store. For WAUK and Civic Media, my name is Greg Bach. I'll talk to you in 20 minutes. It's 7:59.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
CBS News Brief. A royal welcome for President Trump and the First Lady in Windsor as they begin an unprecedented second state visit to the UK. They were greeted by the King and top royalty and driven in a procession of horse-drawn carriages to the castle. Air traffic controllers warned Spirit pilots away when their passenger plane came within 8 miles of Air Force One over New York, as it flew the President and First Lady to the U.K.
There's 1,300 traffic off your left wing by 8 miles, 747. I'm sure you can see who it is.
Utah prosecutors present what they say is damning evidence after charging Charlie Kirk's alleged killer with aggravated murder. CBS's Katrina Kaufman from Provo, Utah.
Text messages between him and his roommate, who was also a romantic partner. You know, he seemed to really confess to this crime in these messages.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.